I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Proper Class podcast. I'm Hannah Chiswick.
And I'm Laura Checkley.
And we are, of course, here to celebrate all things working class. Laura?
No, it's you. I'm letting you do it.
Well, you're letting me do the catchphrase.
Yeah,
oh, Jesus. Because if we don't, who the bloody hell will?
Is that all you can muster?
That's why you're meant to do it.
It's become a thing now.
Oh, it hasn't become a thing.
I'm going to change it around and have it back to me next week. As always, we sit down with a working class hero to celebrate their life and achievements and discuss just how they got to where they are today. And on that note, who are we celebrating this week, Anne?
Right, well, I need to be careful not to fangirl too much this week and embarrass you, Laura, but I am really excited, and actually I don't really care who knows it. It has to be said that this hugely talented actor has got to be one of our country's finest talents. She is a multi-award-winning actor and presenter, and according to Wikipedia, which of course is always right, even has a tram named after her.
Well, you know you've made it when that happens. I'm going to talk to you about that later. I hope it's true. Hannah's right, though. This week's guest has been dominating our screens for years now. You might have just been watching her defusing a bomb on ITV hit drama Trigger Point. You might also remember her iconic role in Shane Meadows' groundbreaking multi-award winning drama This Is England, which saw her win a BAFTA and an RTS award for her performance as Best Actress.
After This Is England, there really was no stopping her, and she went on to dominate the screens in shows and films like Broadchurch, Svengali, The Replacement, Mother's Day, I Am Nicola, Alex Rider and The Secret Agent.
And not forgetting Action Team, a comedy caper starring yours truly. It was a huge hit, only in my mum's house, of course, but it was a hit nonetheless. But no, seriously, not only a top-class actress, but also turning a hand to presenting too, with the incredibly touching documentary Our Dementia Choir. Did you see that?
It was amazing.
Oh, God, which really resonated with the public and, in my opinion, a vital bit of telly.
Not content with all that, she has recently launched her own production company along with her partner called Build Your Own Films, which will offer equality of opportunity to people from all backgrounds.
Her biggest hit to date, though, has to be the award-winning gargantuan hit that is Line of Duty. Folks, it's true. She's here. Well, she's not quite here, but she's on Zoom. It's the loveliest lady in showbiz, national treasure, and a hairdo to die for. It is Vicky McClure.
Woo!
Was that excruciating?
That was excruciating. I've gone red. I mean, I've gone the colour of my jumper. My God.
But you've done so much and you don't want to leave too much out.
So we just have to clear up. Do you have a tram named after you?
I do. I saw it literally I was in town the other day, and every time there's a tram passing, I'm checking, is it mine? And I did, I saw it.
What is it, and is it called Vicky?
It's Vicky McClure. That basically, there's a tram system in Nottingham and they've named all the trams after different people like Torvald D and Brian Clough, Robin Hood, you know, and I got my own tram.
It's amazing.
It's mental.
I think that's amazing. Have you been on it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, been on it. And I like to check it's clean.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
I won't be happy if I get on and there's a load of muck and litter and all sorts of stuff hanging about.
Get so, with a bin bag.
Yeah.
I do like to check
that it's clean.
That is so brilliant.
So, Vicky, we start each week asking our guests to take us back to a place and time that has some meaning to them, somewhere that has a connection to their working class roots. So if you could take us back anywhere today, where would it be?
Oh, it was a tie between either the Players' Rec, which was kind of like a working men's club in Nottingham, nearby where my nonna lived, And it was part of Player's Factory, the cigarette factory.
Wow.
And my mum worked there for years and my granddad worked there. It was a massive institution in Nottingham. So there was lots of people that worked there. But there was this club called Player's Rec. And I just remember there being a lot of bingo, a lot of discos. It was where people had a pint. There was your slot machines. It was a bit like a small variation on what you got when you went to Skeggy and, you know, I did the caravan holidays, which we did every year.
Me too.
And it was, yeah, so it was just having that at home. To me, that just the smell of it. Again, it's just all those little nods when you think about it and go, what was it like? I just remember it smelling like of booze and fags and just sweaty kind of goodness.
Yes, goodness.
When you go back to like those sort of places, which there's not many of them sadly anymore, but that smell, it hits you, doesn't it? And it really is quite gross, but it's like sort of strangely comforting.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That sort of thinking of fags and that as a kid, you know, just because you'd been in and out of the pub or whatever.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because you could smoke everywhere, couldn't you?
Yeah. It was just one of those places where it was quite random. I don't remember what the, you know, there was no scheduling. It was like you'd just go down and there'd be a disco and you're like, what's the disco for? Like, it's not for anything. Do you know what I mean? It's someone's birthday. No one's got married. It's just a Friday night.
Yeah, you've got to have a disco.
Have a disco.
Yeah.
And you get really dressed up. You know, it was like you put on your best clothes. I'd be matching in something with my sister. Oh. My mum loved doing that, putting us in matching clothes. Oh, my God. So that was it, really. That was my fondest memory. And you know, even thinking of my nonna and granddad, that was that side of the family that went to those kind of places. And, you know, fiercely working class people that worked very hard and were very proud of their roots, very proud of their house, very proud of, you know, sort of their surroundings. And, you know, I sort of tapped into that very early on.
Yeah, it's the thing, isn't it? You always talk about it, Laura, like you loved hanging out with the adults.
Always,
but I feel like it's a real working class thing to have that, like, multi-generational places you could go to. They just don't exist as much. Like the clubs, you could go with your nan and granddad,
yeah,
and your mum and dad, and you as kids,
yeah, sleep,
and all be
sleep
together.
On the chairs, and yeah, just throw a coat over you. And that's
yeah,
how it'd be,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Or you'd go to the pub and you go, right, there's a bag of crisps, there's your pop. Now be quiet. And
yeah,
just
yeah,
be quiet.
So that no one took you home to bed. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You just sit there and, you know, play with the other kids and have a nice time.
And funny hearing you saying like people really dressed up, because it's we talked about this earlier on another podcast we're doing earlier about working class people dressing up. I know it's always drilled into me, keep your trainers clean and
yeah,
turn yourself out well, because when you haven't got a lot, that's how you're sort of show yourself to go, well, but we're clean and we're put together and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
And just that dressing up to literally go down a bit of a shithole, really.
Well, there's a lot to be said for, you know, when I was growing up, I never went without. And it was important to kids, and it is to kids now. Like, it's just the way in which the world has changed. It's like if a kid wants a pair of Nike Air Jordans, it's like $350,000.
Yeah, right.
Whereas, you know, it's like back in our day when you wanted a nice pair of trainers, as much as they were expensive, they weren't to that degree. But if you were lucky enough to get the trainers that you wanted or the clothes that you wanted, if anything happens to them, mm-hmm, I ain't replacing them.
Oh,
so you're going to have to look after them. It's that mentality. You know, it's like now I get lots of free things and I feel quite guilty for some of it, because you can't help but think, oh, God, this is kind of weird.
Yeah.
And then there's another part of you that goes, God, it's weird when I do buy something, you know, that's like I bought a really nice Paul Smith jacket a couple of weeks ago and it cost me a lot of money. And, you know, I still to this day, I'm like, nobody come near me whilst I'm wearing it, because if I damage it, I ain't buying another one.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I'm not going to be silly with my money like that.
I know. It doesn't leave you, does it? I recently got a jacket from Jamie Redknapp, his brand.
Oh, nice.
And I got it for free. He gave it to me free. Not bragging a bit. But literally, I don't want to wear it anywhere.
Yeah.
That's the other thing.
And then I keep telling everyone how much it was. Not to brag, but to go, do you know how much is this? Don't sit on that, please.
Yeah.
You know,
Don't you remember, like, even now when, you know, back in the day when I didn't have much money to spend on clothes and things like that, if somebody did like my top, before they'd even finish the sentence. I'd go, oh, it's only $2.99.
Yeah.
I still do that.
From, you know, wherever, because you instantly want to tell them that, oh, it was a bargain. I got a real bargain. And, yeah, and you can complimenting too. Yeah. It. Yeah, you can too.
Yeah.
So it swings in roundabouts, doesn't it?
Do you know what else I think never leaves you? I was using my bank card the other day and I went to use it. It didn't work. And I felt like I needed to announce to the entire, I do have money.
I have just been paid.
I made up this whole incorrect, like not true monologue. Going, I've just been paid and a big bill has gone out. So there's no way it like this. And the woman was like, it's all right. Our machine's not working. Just try again. And I was like,
oh, no. Oh.
And it's just all of those things from thinking of those times when me and you have done it when we first met, going, like, we've got £5 between us. No, like, yeah. And those things stay with you, I think, that idea. I don't think you can ever, something we talk about a lot, money, inevitably on this podcast we end up talking about money a lot because money is so what holds people back from being able to access the arts and be in the arts and work in the arts is just
sustain it.
Yeah. Money is like, how do you get in? How do you stay? All of those things is such a big part of everything, money, really, isn't it?
Massively.
Not only that, I was talking, sadly, I hate to tell you this, on another podcast last week.
How dare you? You mean there are others?
And we was talking, we sort of touched on money a bit, and I said, the thing is, what I didn't get taught, I got taught by my dad, you know, strongly at all costs, pay your tax, and this is how it works. And, you know, the minute I earn anything, it was like, this is what you do. It's like, fine, okay. That from a young age was drilled into me. But the process in which the industry works for people to get paid is not like getting paid by PAYE.
No.
You know, it's a completely different setup. And it's just, you've got to be pre-warned. Do you know what I mean? I don't know why I keep talking about this. It's obviously a bit of a bee in my bonnet. So I just think people might have taken time off work to do the job. Or, you know, you don't know what circumstances they're in. They're being told you're going to get paid X amount of money. You know, explain to them how they're going to get that. They're going to get that in one fair lump. Are they going to get it trickled out throughout the weeks? When is it going to drop? People have got bills to pay. And I'm sorry, but the way the world is at the minute, you can't be just going, oh, it's not gone in yet. It's like, isn't it funny how in the world, you know, people can take your money like that in an instant. I mean, we tap on our phones now. It's as if it's a game.
Yeah.
And then if they say, oh, sorry, I took it out twice. Oh, okay, no worries. It'll take 5 to 10 days to return to your account. What?
Yeah.
You took that in seconds, but you can't get it back to me in seconds. So, you know, I just think in terms of an industry, we have got to start and be a bit more.
You're so right. You're so right. It's. I remember when I got the first, I'd started off doing theatre. And then, so I knew, you know, you get paid weekly with that, even though it's sort of shitter money than telly. Telly's loads better. But when I first started telly, I was like, I had to phone my agent and go, I will get it weekly, Winnie, because I don't know how I'm gonna do next week. I'm paying my rent, I'm paying whatever. And it was like, oh right. And I don't think she meant anything by it at the time, but it was just like, I just felt bad asking.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. I feel really bad going, hello, can I get my money please? Because I need to
I've actually taken a really big because I am theatre director, but I've taken a really big stand on that. I feel like now that I'm a bit older and further on in my career, it's really important as a working class person to be loud and unapologetic about talking about money.
Yeah.
Because I think it's the one thing that I see so many of my fellow working class creatives drop out of the industry because of. And the way that you get paid, and I don't mind now, I couldn't care less. I just call up accounts departments and go, can I get paid please? Because it's 3 weeks late and I can't pay my mortgage. And people get really embarrassed. They're like, and I'm like, it's fine. Can you just do it now? Can you pay me now? And people are so embarrassed about you saying that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You used to be embarrassed about saying it. I remember having conversations with you loads saying, oh God. And you're like, well, just maybe send an email. Oh God, I just feel bad asking.
Yeah, because you're made to feel like embarrassed.
I'm embarrassed to be skinny.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, at that point in your career, I'd have been the same. I'm embarrassed to ask anything.
Yeah.
I'm certainly not going to contact accounts or even, like, think about asking my agent for anything other than my call sheet. Like, I don't know. It's such a daunting industry sometimes to step into. And then once you've, you know, very, very lucky and blessed like we are to have stepped into it to a certain degree where you go, right, I know really how the sort of thing works now and I know how I can navigate certain things. It's very hard to explain that to somebody. And, you know, it's like anything. I've always said to people on set, whether you've got a line or no lines, or you're an essay or whatever, like, it's just got to be an equal playing field.
So I'm just going to take you right back.
Back
to way back when. Where did you grow up? What was your hometown? How was school?
So I grew up in Nottingham. I grew up in an area called Woolerton, which is a lovely, lovely area. A really, really nice area, great people. And I had the best time at school. I'm one of them people that, you know, I just can't really say I had a bad time. It was...
And was it like a comprehensive state school?
It was just, yeah, just a normal comp, about a 10-minute walk from my house. It's called Fernwood. I've returned a few times. I was there only a couple of weeks ago watching their production of Chicago.
Oh,
yeah.
And wow.
it was fantastic, but the school's completely changed. You know, they've had... I think they've turned into an academy now, and they've got facilities like you wouldn't believe,
which is great.
But... I just loved it. And I loved it because I loved the people, my friends, who are still very much my friends now. The teachers were a good laugh. You know, some of them were absolute bah, and you just couldn't be bothered with them. But majority of them, especially Mr. Irons, we had this deputy head called Paul Irons, and he was just such an inspiration to so many people. You know, he spoke to people like directly. There was none of it. I didn't feel like I was being told off by a teacher. I felt like I was being told off by a family member that was disappointed in me. Do you know what I mean? So it actually hit home,
nice.
Sort of thing.
And were you academic? Were you academic?
No.
No, not really.
But I had a lovely time. Do you know what though? Because I started at the TV workshop in Nottingham when I was 11. So at the same time as I'm starting school comp, I'm starting this workshop thing.
What is that? Sorry, Vicky, the TV workshop. Is it like a little Saturday school kind of thing?
It's got an amazing reputation, hasn't it?
Yeah, like, it's not a drama school. It's called the workshop. It's in Nottingham. And people like Samantha Morton, Jack O'Connell, Soccer, a lot of the people from This Is England, just to name a few.
Yeah.
You know, it's just an alumni of incredible actors down there. And it was ran by a guy called Ian Smith. And basically you got in on your merit. You didn't pay a penny to go.
Free.
So when it was free.
Wow, it was free.
I know. And it was the making of me as a person and me as an actor for sure, because nobody was there with an agenda. Do you know what I mean? You had to want to go. It was twice a week. You had to go after school. And then if you was doing plays, you'd got to put the work in, and you do have to rehearse more than twice a week. And, you know, it was disciplined. It was a very disciplined place to be, but it was also pure freedom. So you can go down there, and because it was improvised-based, it's like you could swear all you like, you could come up with the maddest stories. And if you went, you know, if you thought you wanted to do something funny, everyone would laugh.
Yeah.
They'd all encourage it. And if you wanted to cry your eyes out and do something really dramatic and deep and dark, they'd be there, like, with you.
What an incredible place.
Oh, my God, honestly. So I was there for 10 years.
And are they still going? Are they?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're still going, but it's slightly different in terms of the costing, because obviously funding became difficult. But it's also not, you know, it's not fees that are sort of out of this world, and there's a lot of bursary sort of schemes in place, so if you can't afford it, then, you know, hopefully that still won't get in your way.
Wow.
And it's still the same sort of shithole that it always was, because it used to be in this basement in town, and honestly it was just great, because it was a shithole, you felt like you could do anything. You don't worry about moving that settee around there because you might scuff the walls.
And felt like, presumably, like, yeah, like you belonged there, like you didn't not belong there. Because you can go to, I went to a posh dance school when I was a kid, and I felt so out of place. And for a long time, that created a big sense of not being good enough for me. Just because, I mean, a lot of them weren't all posh, but a lot of them were posh too.
Well,
so,
yeah.
And it just felt like I shouldn't be there. So that would have been like, you know, like feeling like you belong.
It just felt like there was, you know, it was ours. If we wanted to spray paint the wall because we was doing a drama that was in a, you know, an alleyway or something, then we'd spray paint the wall. And then if somebody was doing a play after that where they needed something Shakespearean, then they'd paint over it.
I like your Shakespeare voice.
Thank you, darling. It's everything I learned at the workshop.
It's such a shame, isn't it? Because I feel like we've really lost. I went to a drama, a thing called JIT, which was Greenwich Young People's Theatre, and it was in a scuzzy old church hall in Woolwich. And it was amazing. Similar thing, we just sort of ran about and did plays about stuff, you know. And
yeah.
when I decided at 11 I wanted to direct, they went, on you go.
Yeah.
And everyone let me do it. And it was sort of that. And I feel like we've got really focused, perhaps under our current government, in like what the outcomes of drama are. Like, is it valuable? Like, you know, and it, I think it's not only about everyone going on to have amazing careers. That's fantastic if they do. But it's also about going on to have a full life as a human, like, and meeting other people and having that expression and finding ways to express yourself, even if that means, you know, you go on and become a lawyer, that's definitely going to have enriched you somehow.
Definitely. And yeah, 100%.
You know, I just think that we've become so fixated on whether it's an important subject. And
I think it's confidence, isn't it? Because,
yeah,
yeah.
You know, one thing that I found at school, I didn't take to drama that well at school. Like, I didn't get involved in the plays and stuff because I was way too busy having fun with my friends and writing letters. Sure. You know, about whoever I was dating at that time, and then folding them into tiny, tiny little things. but the reason I think I didn't take to drama that much there was purely because if I wanted to do something that I felt was, you know, a bit out there, I just felt like maybe some of my mates might be like, oh, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Yeah.
So I thought, well, I'd just leave that for the workshop. And, you know, school and workshop were two very separate things. And I had more confidence when I was there.
Mm.
And, you know, nowadays, like you were just saying, it's as if there's a process and there's a, you know, a ladder we've all got to climb. It's like, what, you know, if I was talking to, I don't even know what this means, but, you know, looking at my own career now, if somebody had presented that to me years and years ago and said, will you be happy with that? I'd be like, are you joking? I'm absolutely ecstatic with that. That'll do me beautifully. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Whereas it feels like, well, no, now it's Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
What? So what? Once I get there, then have I completed the task?
Yeah. Like,
yeah.
And also, like, what constitutes success? Like, you know, yeah. I look, you know, like Hannah's dad's an actor and he's 76. And he's acted for most of his life.
Since he was
consistently,
three.
Since he was about three. I think that's really successful. He's not famous, but I think it's really fucking successful. And I think anyone that can sustain certainly this industry, many industries, but certainly a creative one and still be doing it at 72 and like going, yeah.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
That's fucking successful. Like why should you have to go to Hollywood? You're hugely successful. Like, you're mega successful. And you're right. Like, if someone said to me, you'll be a lead on a BBC One sitcom, I'll go, I'll have that just for the day. I'd have it for the day. I don't need a series. I'd just do a pilot. Like, you know, but and goalposts are allowed to shift, of course. But yeah, you're right. It's like
the joy of doing it can be taken away if you're not careful,
definitely,
can't it?
Definitely.
Oh, God. Listen, if you forget, if you start to not enjoy it, what's the point?
Then it's not the one, is it?
Yeah. What's the point?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So you're at Theatre Workshop.
Yeah.
And I had read on Wikipedia. So is that where Shane Meadows found you at 15, wasn't it? Didn't you get a part in something at 15?
Yeah, that was A Room for Romeo Brass. That was one of his. So I think he'd just done 24/7. So it's probably like his second feature film. And he came to workshop and auditioned a load of us. And then I got through to the next round. And to be fair, Shane wasn't the name that Shane is now. So I was a bit like, no idea who he is or what kind of deal. You know, I didn't care. I just, you know, I had no idea.
Wasn't intimidated by it, yeah. I suppose. Yeah.
And will I still have time to write my tiny letters?
Yes, that's all that's important right now. So I was like, not intimidated by Shane so much. But then what happened was the way that the workshop's broken down is it's 11 to 16, 16s and over, and then under 11s. So at this point, I'm in 11 to 16 group. Now, all the people that have been recalled was me and then people in the over 16s. I don't want to be near them. They scare the living shit out of me. This is, you know, being asked to go and hang out with the year above. It's like, it's too much. Yeah. So I remember being really scared, really nervous, and just not wanting to perform at all because all these like older girls were looking at me like, you know, they were lovely, but it was just that fear of doing it wrong. And so I think the fact that I didn't get into the circle, because that's how it was always in a circle formation in workshop. It was just the way it was. But you'd have to, you know, so people are looking at you from every angle while you're doing this improvisation. And I just kept it really kind of simple, I think, because I was so nervous.
Yeah.
And Shane obviously took something from that. And thank God he did.
Wow.
That's all I can say.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah.
So then that happened, and presumably you went off to film. What happened after that? Did you just go back to school, complete school, and sort of like,
yeah,
did you get an agent and did stuff start to sort of, you know?
I did get an agent, but it was kind of towards when it was coming out. So I went back to school and genuinely thought, like, guys, just calm down when you're around me, yeah, because I'm a huge deal right now. Just made a film. And, you know, when I say nothing came, like, you know, nothing really came from it. And, you know, the distribution of films, I kind of understand what that is now. Back then, I didn't have a clue what the word even distribution probably meant.
No.
And found out that it was actually only across 6 cinemas across the country. Now, in my head, it's everywhere. It's everywhere and everyone's watching it.
Yeah, Hollywood will come calling, of course.
Yeah. So, yeah, very quickly just went back to normal life, finished school, went to college, managed about 4 months and then went and got a job in H. Samuels.
Amazing. Oh, what did your parents think about you? Like, were they supportive when you said, you know, were they always up for it? They're up for you going to the workshop and then, all right, were you doing a film or?
Oh, they love it. They've been, yeah. I mean, like, genuinely, you know, to have the support of your family.
Oh, that's unreal, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, you can't do it without them, is the truth.
No.
Well, it's so much harder, isn't it?
Oh, my God, yeah. I really admire people that, you know, friends that I've got in the industry that didn't have that infrastructure and they still managed to do it.
Yeah.
Because I wouldn't have, my stepdad run me everywhere. My mum did everything, like paying for, you know, doing all the little shows and whatever. And because one thing leads to the next, isn't it? And
yeah,
I'd take my hat off to people that got there without any of that, really. So lovely that they supported that.
I'm so delighted to hear that you were working in H. Samuels, because that's literally a name I've not enjoyed for a long time.
Oh, my God.
H. Samuels in Lewisham. Used to go in and look in the window and go, one day.
Oh, my God.
The stuff in the window.
Tommy girl.
I really wanted one of those rings that said love on it. I really wanted one.
I had one, my initials, LC.
Oh, lovely.
And a sovereign.
Oh, yeah, I had a sovereign.
A sovereign? Oh, I really wanted a sovereign.
Yeah, loved a sovereign.
I got my sovereign from Argos, though. I remember it.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Naturally from Argos, yeah. Actually, mine might have been from Argos. I don't know. I just remember loving it. I loved my initial ring, though. I loved it so much.
That is amazing.
Yeah, next to the sovereign, of course.
Big chunky rings. Yeah. So you're in H, so what happens? How do you sort of leave HM?
Well, I think I stayed for about 4 years. Was it 4 years? 16, 17, 18? Yeah, probably around that. At least a couple of years anyway. And
did you get any free jewellery? Did you get, like, was it just discount?
No, I tell you what I did get, because I had to train to become an ear piercer.
All right.
And I do remember on a couple of occasions, once I'd loaded the ear piercing gun, there was a few kids where they chickened out towards the end. So I was like, I'm so sorry, I'm still going to have to charge you because I've loaded it.
Oh, wow.
And then they'd be like, oh, okay, no problem. I go into the back and just pierce my ears.
Sure.
Where else have you worked then?
Dotted piers. I did about a week at Boots through an agency firm. I worked in a sunbed shop, but I left there because people would moan about how hot the beds are.
Brilliant.
That's brilliant.
I can't stick with that either. And then I got an office job. Oh, I did look after a dance school for a year. I remember that kind of being a turning point where I was like, I need to get back into it.
Right. I was going to say, along the way, all of these jobs you had, were you still acting, or was it just like, nah, that's done?
I had about a year where there was just, I wasn't even interested. I was kind of, you know, the auditions weren't going my way and things just weren't turning out, the way you kind of hoped. But I didn't completely, I wasn't like, oh, I'm completely done. I just left my agent. I thought, there's no point. It's not working. She was putting me up for stuff that I didn't really like. And I thought, well, I'm in no position to pick.
Mm.
So maybe it's not for me and I'll just see how we go,
Yeah.
A bit confused, really. And then, I looked after this dance school for a bit, which was great. And then I got a job in an office, starting like Saturdays, evenings, that kind of thing, just on the phones. And then I ended up there for 8 years.
Wow.
And I took on every role because I was just one of them people that just gets bored easily. So I was like, oh, anything going in HR? Anything going in training? Anything? Yeah, I'll take the vending machines.
And so what changed? What happened? What was the turning point?
Well, the turning point was This Is England 86. That was that was the sort of the first opportunity I had where I could think about seeing how far I could go financially. Again, it comes back to money because it has to, because we have to survive.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it was the first time I thought, right, I can leave my jobs and see if I can just give it a go. And This Is England 86 was an opportunity. And that's exactly what I saw it as and what Shane presented it to me to be, that, it was focused quite heavily on my character and knowing what we were doing with her as her storyline. And I just thought, I'm going to grab this by the balls and I am going to give it everything I've got because it really could change the game. So I left my office job and I just went without other support systems.
Went for it, yeah.
Yeah, and
it's scary doing that, isn't it? It's scary. It's so ridiculous, isn't it? Because it's not scary in the grand scheme of things. It's like, I talk about this all the time, being a working class actor and being without, if you've never been without or been on the breadline or been points where you're like, I don't know how I'm going to sustain this, it's really hard to make that decision to go, I think I'm going to jump off and go for it. And it's pride. Yeah.
It's pride. It's that proud. It's that I am proud of my roots. I'm very, very proud of my roots. I still live in Nottingham. I can't prize myself away from my roots. And I think, had This Is England 86 gone off and done its thing and then I'd have left the office. I remember saying to them, if I need to come back, can I come back? Like, I'd already done that thing where it's like, it's probably going to fail because it probably just will fail.
Yeah.
And, even just down to doing auditions, and I'd be like, oh, I'm so sorry. Can I get, next Thursday off unpaid because I've got to go to this audition. I go to the audition. And then for days later, everyone at work's like, oh, did you get it? And it's like, oh, I haven't found out yet. Weeks later, oh, did you get it? Oh, I haven't found out yet. It's like that forever.
Yeah.
And that's the pride thing where you go, what? So then I leave, I do the job. And then a year later, I'm like, can I come back?
Yeah.
It's pride. It's like, you just go, oh, what? I haven't made it.
Yeah.
I think if you've got a work ethic as well, it's just something you've been brought up in. If you put, you know, that's the thing of people in my family, you just work. That's what you do. You don't not work. And that's such a, that idea of work as an option, I find a really alien idea. Like, I still can't understand that.
Yeah.
Like, that it's an optional thing. Like, it's like, surely you just work. That's what people do. And people go, yeah, I might just take 6 months off to, like, I'm like, wow. Like,
yeah.
And that's for people who've always been able to do that because they come from money. Or even when people make money and they just come and take 6 months off. It's just not in my...
It's options.
Are you good at having time off?
No.
I mean,
no.
Laura's the worst.
Oh, I'm terrible.
You're the
I'm
worst.
So terrible.
And do you know what? I'm such a, I'm happy to hold my hands up. I am a moaner as well. You know, it's like.
When you are working, you mean?
When I am working. I think any actor has this classical disease where when you get the schedule, the first thing you look at is your days off.
Yeah.
Even if you've just had 6 months off and you go, oh no, I'm working on that day. That's not going to work for me. It's like, what? You know,
Can I go home? It's always right. When can I get home? When can I get home?
Exactly.
If you're away.
Yeah, working away, that's the hardest part, I think. But yeah, I don't know what I'm having time off for. That's my problem.
Yeah.
So even if I've got, you know, I've not been filming for weeks now, but I don't feel like I've had, I don't feel like I've sat and, you know, I've not been doing Lego and watching Netflix. I've just been in my office or been doing stuff. I can't sit still. I can't.
No.
Obviously, it was a success. You go off and do England. It's like a massive success.
Yeah.
So how did your life change? Was there a huge sort of period of adjustment to that?
Because it was huge, wasn't it? It was massive. It was like...
Yeah, it was. It was massive. It was massive at the time. And it, you know, the BAFTA was insane. I mean, I was up against like Anna Maxwell Martin, who, you know, now I know very well, Juliet Stevenson, and, you know, huge actors. And I remember being kind of pre-warned, like, this probably won't go your way, just so you know. It's like, okay, got it. But what doesn't happen is a daughter Narnia, as I call it. You know, I think people think, right, you've won a BAFTA.
Yeah.
Okay. And I do remember being invited to a party in LA off the back of the BAFTA. It was like, you know, something that was related to all that stuff. And I said, oh, well, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've still never been to LA to this day. But at that time, I was like, my God, this is huge. But what I couldn't do is take somebody with me on that cost. So therefore, they'd happily pay for me to get to LA and do all the stuff, but they wasn't going to cover anybody else's travel. Oh, so I went, well, then I'm not coming. I can't tell you how scared that would have, like, walking into a room with, I don't know who, because I don't know the industry, because I've literally just left the office. Yeah. I can't do that. And, you know, at the time, my family and friends also didn't have however much that
to fly with you to LA.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it's changed my life. Like, that show has completely changed my life. Meeting Shane changed my life. Going to the workshop, it's all, you know, I look back now and go, yeah, if only I could tell myself that back then, like, chill a bit. It's all going to work out in the end, you know, whatever that working out is, because, you know, everything changes on a dime in this world. But, you know, there was certainly sort of that feeling of something felt different. But again, it didn't feel instant.
Right.
You know, this industry moves really, really slowly, and then it like goes wild and then it goes slow again. And that's how I still think it feels like that to this day, really.
That's mad. It's mad to hear you say that, because it's so easy because, you know, people from the outside go, well, you never stop, do you? And you're like,
Yeah.
No, I've stopped. And I'm stopped. I've actually stopped. Can't get arrested, you know, like.
From the outside, yeah.
Yeah, from the outside looking in, you know, you go, wow. It's really funny you talk about not having someone to go with you. I went to a party the other day. It was a BAFTA thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I weren't allowed a plus one because, you know, tickets were tight. So I went on my own. I knew someone else going, so I'd given them a call and said, oh, please meet me at the entrance because I can't go on my own. But I literally sat in the corner eating chicken and chips that were going round. I think I must have had about three portions.
Well done.
Because, thank you. Because I remember someone stepped on my dress. This girl was coming up the stairs.
Oh, this is going to rip our heart out. I can feel
story.
It.
No, she stepped on my, my robey bit that was a bit hanging down, and I kept having to pull it all night. I felt so uncomfortable. I've got such huge imposter syndrome anyway, which I know we all have, but it was really big on this night. And I thought, it's all right, you deserve to be here. Come on, you deserve to be here. I mean, I was wandering around on my own a lot, and I went up the stair. I went up the stairs, and this girl had stepped back onto my robe. And instead of me going, oh, sorry, babe, can you just get off my, I just sort of was like, maneuvering it really slowly from under her, so every time she shifted weight I quickly pulled it out because I was too frightened to go
I'm
to her.
Just laughing in
I
your
don't
face.
Even know who she was.
Oh no,
I thought she's way more important than me. She looks really cool and gorgeous, and you know, and I just felt like my mum sat in the corner, which, you know, nothing wrong with that, but I'm not good at those things. I'd have done exactly the same as you. I'd have never have gone there.
Yeah,
no, Millie, you're joking.
Even now I don't think I'd have gone on my own now. I don't,
or even though it's only something you look forward to, is it, like, oh God.
But why would anyone want to go to a party where they don't know anyone on their own?
Yeah.
Do you know why I was talking about it? It's about feeling like, I don't know, and I think it's definitely prevalent in a working class person, people where you just feel in those sort of scenarios, like it takes me right back to being
up at your dancing school where you felt like, yeah,
where I felt everyone was watching, I didn't deserve to be there. I know not everyone's got the same story as me, but I wondered if, I know that you just said you feel like that still, and you've got loads of success, and, you know, people are going to be going, I always think I'll arrive, people won't know who I am, which is often the case, but people know who you are, you know, you're...
Yeah, no, it's definitely weird. I mean, you know, line of duty, when I look back at what happened with This Is England compared to what happened with line of duty, it's two very different beasts, you know. It's like, This Is England's quite niche, and, you know, it's got a very hardcore audience, and then you've got line of duty, which is a much more commercial, much wider scope, a much more global scope, all that kind of stuff. So I was kind of, you know, I've got myself now in a position where I feel like I've got a large audience because they're both quite different audiences. But, you know, I am still just gobsmacked I'm here. You know, I know people might think, oh, full of shit. It's not. Like, it's...
No.
I've got used to what I do. Mm-hmm. I've got used to what, you know, I've done Graham Norton 3 times or something. It's like, that's mental. You know, that's just weird.
Yeah.
Like, I never thought I'd ever make it onto those shows. I used to watch it as a kid and think, oh, you know, that would be, like, imagine me being on that.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, now I've done it 3 times. I know what the drill is, and, you know, I order Nando's, and it's like, you know, this weird routine, and it just makes it more comfortable. But it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm not PR trained. I'm just doing it my own way.
That seems like you said this thing earlier, which is really lovely thing about how, like, you haven't been able to drag yourself away, obviously, and you're still at home where you grew up, like you've stayed. And has that been important to you to, like, really keep those roots and have that kind of anchor to...
Well, it's important for me to be around my family, number one. So if my family told me tomorrow that they're all emigrating to Australia, then I'm off to Australia.
Right.
That's that. So, you know, nothing would, like, keep me too far away from my nephews and my sister and my mum and dad. And, you know, Johnny, bless him, like, when we met, he was living in London, and I moved to London with him for a bit and loved it and was like, this is, you know, it's great, it's a wonderful city, but I just know it's, you know, I like to drive to Tesco and fill my boot. I don't want to be like walking and then I had to traipse them all up the stairs and then, we had to go to the dry cleaners. I was like, it was just the way of that world was just different. Nothing wrong with it. It was just, I just felt a bit, didn't feel at home. So luckily Johnny, you know, took to Nottingham in the way that he has, and he loves it. So thank God I've been able to stay at home, because that's the reason I'm here. I just want to be around my family and my friends, and I don't really work in London. You don't know where you're going to work. You know, as an actor, you're on the road. So Belfast became a bit of a home for quite some time, because that's where Line of Duty was shot. And I would rather know that when I'm not at work, I'm at home.
Mm-hmm.
I know where everyone is. I can, you know, go and see my sister, trip to TK Maxx. That's what we do.
I know when I first met you, I think you and I had a conversation about whether or not to get a cleaner. I mean, I still haven't got one. And
me
I remember you talking about not getting a cleaner, not because also we like to clean ourselves and know it's clean, which was one of the parts of the conversation. But a big part was like, that kind of, oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah.
It's the money thing, isn't it? And paying someone to clean. I come from a family of cleaners. My nan was a cleaner. My stepdad had a cleaning company. I cleaned for a long time. So I don't know. I like cleaning, so that's fine.
Yeah, I'm obsessed, mate. I love cleaning. Yeah. It's my therapy, you know.
Yeah.
But in the same breath, what I do love doing is paying people, you know, the whole process of, you know, it's like Johnny, he's not going to get a toolbox out. The toolbox belongs to me. And, you know, he's very working class. He's from, Merthyr Tydfil in Wales. Like his dad was down the mines. It's like he knows about the graft, but he would much rather pay somebody and make sure it's going into a local pocket.
Yeah.
Is a local handyman or electrician, or they've got their trade and they've got these skills that they've worked very hard for. My dad's a joiner. You know, I wouldn't dream of trying to do it myself. And I know my dad can come and do it, you know, incredibly well.
Yeah.
So I do believe in paying people and, you know,
for their skill. Yeah.
Cleaning companies, so you can make great money. It's like,
oh, God, yeah.
Happily give them your service. Maybe I will one day, Laura. Let's catch up.
We'll catch up. Listen, we have to talk about line of duty, obviously. I mean, when you spoke about, we touched on it briefly, saying it's just, that's bonkers, isn't it? The success of it. Not bonkers because it's brilliant and I love it. And it's hugely successful. Did you feel a massive shift after that? Did anything massively change for you after that? Like walking down the street, not being able to get on a bus or, you know, that sort of stuff.
On your tram.
Oh, get on
my tram. I'd say it's kind of been, quite a progressive time. So from the first two series was on BBC Two and people enjoyed it, but it didn't have the same momentum. And then it just started to build and build. It was the last series that was just bonkers. And, you know, I think given that we was still in COVID times and people such need of escapism and a lot of people were at home and all that kind of stuff, that it was quite, it was a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know me, Martin and AD and Jed would have little Zooms every week when it was on because so much had happened. There'd be so much in the press. There'd be PAPs and it'd be all that kind of thing. And you're just going, oh, blimey, this is new. it all felt quite, it felt a lot. And then in the same breath, we love interacting with the audience. You know, me, Martin and Jed are on Twitter and Instagram and all that kind of stuff. And I like that way of it, because without the audience, without these people that want a selfie and watch it and turn it on and, you know, dedicate every Sunday night to the show, we haven't got a job.
Yeah.
No, of course not.
You know, they determine whether or not they want to see us back on their screens. And, you know, I've said before when I've been like, I've had it where I think it was Line of Duty. There was a series of Line of Duty out and then the replacement was like being trailed off the back of Line of Duty. And I was like, oh God, that's too many things. Like I couldn't, it made me feel a bit, you know, weird because I was like, oh my God, I'm on the telly and they're promoting my next show. And, you know, I felt like I was taking up people's jobs or I was just on telly too much and people were going to be like, oh no, like give someone else a job, all that kind of stuff. You know, you just go, well, no, I filmed them like completely separately at different times. That's not my doing. That's the BBC.
Also, don't apologise. It's your time and you should absolutely be enjoying it and lapping up. You're brilliant, you know, and also, you know, really nice person too. So, and it's nice. It is though. It's nice to see nice things happen to really nice people. It's, you know, I'm chuffed for you.
Listen, I'm so lucky. I'm so lucky. You know, there's not a moment that I sit here and just go, oh, well, there we go. This is how it is, and I'm gonna, you know, just expect it to be like this forevermore.
Yeah, well, you're not built like that, so it's like, you know.
Yeah, I think I just want to give people, like, you know, God, if I died tomorrow, I'd just love to know that whatever I've left is honest.
Yeah. Mm. And can I just quickly talk to you about I'm going to let you go in a minute, but your production company, because me and Ham were just looking it up earlier, just really, really interested in it because it feels like you're giving back a little bit, which is nice.
Yeah, no, I'm dead excited about it.
Only talk about what you can, obviously. But yeah,
no, it's weird. It is. It's definitely in that sort of process at the moment where I'm like, oh, I can't wait for all the things to line up and then I can go, woo! But yeah, at the moment, it's been a real learning curve in business, for sure. That's where I wished I'd have stopped writing so many letters. Sorry, how, lad? I don't understand. So, yeah, it's been a massive learning curve. And me and Johnny have basically just, we're going to throw everything into it that we can. Johnny's the same as me. We want to give people jobs, give people opportunities, make good telly, make good film, documentary, whatever it is. There's, you know, it's an organic process, really. But we was... It was Henry Normal, who used to be co-owner of Baby Cow, as you know, yeah. And he's from Notts, and he spoke to us years ago and says, oh, you know, you should do it yourself. And I was thinking, can I, though? Because I'm just a working class kid who's not got that kind of brain. And I'm sorry, but the contracts are just way too daunting for me to read. And, you know, there's just a lot that goes into setting something like that up. And me and Johnny just put a bit of belief into each other. And went, sod it, why don't we try? Because Henry did it. And Henry is the same kind of guy. You know, he's very astute. Obviously, he's done incredibly well. But back then, he just did it.
Yeah.
And as much as it might have been slightly different times and this industry was less chaotic with like 900 billion channels, it's, you know, it's still worth giving it a go. And I'd love to be able to prove to people that haven't got an education and haven't got all that kind of, you know, hand ups, I've given it a go and here's hoping it'll work.
Oh, it's so exciting.
It's so exciting. I think that's why we like doing this podcast, talking to brilliant people like yourself that you hope that, I don't know, someone will listen and go, yeah, oh God, I could do that. And I think that's why we wanted to do it, was to feel like class,
yeah,
certainly
totally.
Being working class always has to be associated with being bleak or having, you know, which it certainly can be, of course, but that you can't aim high. That, you know, like, I feel like this country is, we're boxed, aren't we? And it's built for us to stay in our place. And I think that's why we wanted to do this one, just to sort of go, actually, let's talk to
and being working class
stories.
And being successful aren't mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
Like, you can be both things.
Yeah.
And I know that, of course, it gets more complicated as you have more success. And we're back to money again, of course, money, and then it affords you things and homes and lifestyles and things that you wouldn't have been able to have had you perhaps carried on working in the office you're in. You may have, but you may not have. You know,
it's
probably afforded you other things. But at the same time, I mean, it's something we always ask people, but do you still consider yourself working class?
Well, I still feel like I live I'm surrounded by it. Do you know what I mean? I've got a nice house now, but it's not some gated community. You know, I live amongst people. Hardworking people. And to me, it doesn't feel, my surroundings are different. But yeah, you know, certainly now I feel extremely privileged. Things are different. Things are different. You know, I don't do my food shop like I used to do my food shop.
Yeah, of course not.
You know, and there's simple things like that
But you don't forget what it was like to do that shop on 20 quid or whatever. Like, I don't anyway. I don't ever forget.
I think the ultimate answer to that is I don't forget where I came from, and I never will.
Yeah, or want to.
I don't want to. I'm so fiercely proud of my family and, you know, just like my morals, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like, you know, say your please and thank yous, clean up after yourself. Like the fact that there was a certain amount of discipline around me and that there wasn't somebody there doing things because we didn't have a cleaner or we didn't have certain personnel that distracted you from doing that, or, you know, extra curriculum, somebody helping me out with
a leg up. Yeah.
Yeah. Because of that, you do, you know, it doesn't, the thing is, it's funny, the working class topic, there's varying degrees, isn't there?
Yeah, of course.
You know, there's varying degrees as to people's poverty. And, you know, I certainly don't class myself as somebody that grew up and felt that kind of poverty. I felt like my dad worked his arse off. My mum was, like, you know, always working and doing some, even if she wasn't working in a job, the house was spotless and she was doing something to make sure me and my sister were, you know, getting the best we could. But it's as if we're not trying to bash people that weren't from that world.
No, of course not.
It's about celebrating.
It's about celebrating, exactly that. Yeah, it's about celebrating the fact that I love it when I listen to podcasts or interviews and somebody speaks and I can relate to it.
Yeah. Mm,
and what I struggle with is majority of what we see and hear is not relatable.
Yes.
So when we all sit there and go, oh, let's watch a bit of Peter Kay or, you know, whoever, and all he's telling you about is something that's so menial, but you laugh so hard because it's relatable and because it feels like...
Speaks to you.
Exactly. And I suppose, you know, what we want is just a fair piece of the pie.
Absolutely.
Because a lot of what's out there, majority is, it, you know, doesn't feel as relatable.
And I think as well, just about, if there's one thing I always hope would come out of this podcast is for like younger people listening to people like you speak and just like, feeling all the things they're still going to feel like imposters and not quite good enough, but still walking into the space anyway.
Yeah.
And trying to, you know, have a little bit of that space. I just really, you know, feel so passionately about people doing that.
Yeah, totally.
So we just always wrap up the show asking our guests if they'd like to celebrate anyone today, a working class hero. Who would that be for you?
That'd be my sister.
Oh.
My sister Jenny, who is my rock. Yeah, she's my everything. And she will never let me forget where I came from.
Love her.
Not in a million years. She's. I've seen her go through it. You know, she's had the highs and the lows, but she is one fierce working class hero. For me, always will be.
And what does she do?
Well, she used to work at the office that I worked at. We used to work there together. And now she works for me.
Yeah. No way, that's amazing.
Yeah. Which is like, it's quite new, but yeah, we love her. We worked, that's amazing. You know, she's, there's nobody else on this planet who I could let have access to my inbox. So,
And she'll keep you in your place, babe. She's, oh, that's so
yeah,
lovely.
Exactly. So yeah, she would like text me going, yeah, I might go for a facial and I need it. I'm like, yeah, do what you want. It's great. I love that. The thought of being able to, you know, eventually sort of have my family and
yeah, that's
and
incredible.
Pay them. It's like, yeah, much rather it's
that's the dream. Yeah, that's the dream. Definitely 100%.
So her name's Jenny.
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll be celebrating Jenny as well as you today. Vicky, honestly, oh, thank you so much
for
having gone on and on, right?
I mean, actually furious that we can't do another hour. Absolutely amazing.
Well, let's hook up anyway. I'll see you. I'll be in London. I'm always
you said that
somewhere.
To me 6 years ago, Vicky, and I've seen hide my hair as loops.
I mean, to be fair, COVID wasn't entirely Vicky's fault, was it? So.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my
it,
God.
Thank you so much, mate. Thank you.
Thank you, mate.
Oh my God, I could have spoke to her for hours. But you know what? When I first met Vicky, I just instantly, we gravitated towards each other in the smoking area when I used to smoke. And I just, you know, like when you just meet someone and for all the amount of success that she's had, I was just like, it was just like chatting to one of my cousins. Like, she's just one of
she
us.
She does
you know?
Strike me as a kindred spirit of yours there.
Yeah, she is.
There's just
is.
Something about her, you know, her connection to her roots and the... It's a funny thing, isn't it, when people get the level of success that she has had or and continues to have, they can become a little bit like reluctant to talk about where they've come from and their, you know, their life and the normal jobs that she's had down the jewellers.
I know, yeah.
All of that kind of stuff. And that actually seems to be something that she not only is not afraid to talk about.
She's
funny
proud
word
of it.
Proud of it. And
yeah.
It's a big part of her, something she holds dear and where her best mates have come from. And
yeah.
I think it says a lot about a person who gravitates back to where they came from or who holds, you know, strong roots. A lot of our guests have had that, haven't they? And
well,
if you think
about
it. Yeah,
so I was desperate to get her on because I just know that she gravitates home all the time. She lives there because it's so important to her, her roots, her family. And, you know, we're those sort of girls and all, aren't we? So I'm so glad you got to talk to her. And she's just...
Me too.
Honestly, a dime. I mean, not only talented, just a really, really brilliant person and funny as well. She's so funny.
She said at the end of that, I don't know if it was... I think it was probably off mic by then saying, oh, it's a shame we could have gone on for hours down the pub. So I'll hold you to that, Vicky.
Absolutely.
First pints on me.
See you down there. So that's it for this week, but we will be back next week with a brand new guest. Can't wait. Can you?
What was that voice?
What? I was doing like a posh voice.
No, don't do that. That needs
well,
a bit of work.
You're looking at me like absolutely.
Who are you?
There. All right, go on, bugger off. Keep it classy.
It's more like it.
Proper Class podcast is produced by Michelle Farr-Scott for Rangabee Productions, edited by James Torrance, with music by Tommy Music.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.